Hi there, I'm Nihal and you're listening to the Rescue Tales podcast. Now this episode is all about puppies. They're cute, they're cuddly, but they can really be a handful. And what you do in the early days with your puppy will have a huge impact on their behavior as they get older. So in this episode, I chat with dog trainer and behaviorist Anthony Dimerinis, and he reveals some of the biggest mistakes you want to avoid making with your puppy. Anthony will also teach you how to potty train your puppy, and he'll talk you through what to do if your furry friend is mouthing or biting excessively. And he also explains why you need to start teaching recall from day one. As always, I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Anthony, and thank you so much for joining me on the Rescue Tales podcast today.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm super excited to be chatting with you today.
Yeah, likewise. I'm excited.
So before we jump into the many topics that we're covering today, including puppies, we're going to be talking about recall, resource guarding, all sorts of great things. Tell our listeners a little bit about who you are, your background, and what you do.
So my name is Anthony Dimerinis. I'm located on Long Island, New York, and I run my own business called Dimerinis Dog Training and Behavior. My main focus is actually working with dogs with serious behavior issues, specifically aggression. And then my team trainer, she focuses on behavior modification with fear, anxiety, stress that doesn't generally involve aggressive behavior. And then she also focuses a lot on puppies as well. And I do mainly in-home training sessions. And then I also do offer online services as well with my business. And I'm a student of Michael Shikashio. I actually been a student of his for 4 or 5 years now, before he actually started his online program. I was fortunate enough to mentor with him. And I'm also a student of Kim Brophy, who I've gotten to know really well for a little over a year now. And her work is amazing. And I love a lot of her stuff. And some of the answers maybe to some of your questions might sound sort of similar to what she might say in some way, because a lot of the work that she does, I've adopted because I really like her style and the way that she thinks and looks at certain behavior cases or even with puppies. So you might see some similarities.
I'm a huge fan of Kim's and Michael's. So I will link to their content in the show notes of this episode. But let's start off with puppies, because puppies are adorable. Many people over the course of the pandemic have brought puppies into their homes, often without knowing what they're getting themselves into. Yep. So tell us some of the biggest mistakes you see your clients coming to you with when they have puppies that can potentially start to cause behavioral issues later on in the puppy's or the dog's life.
Sure. So I guess in general, some of the biggest mistakes that people make is either maybe the lack of training right away. I think sometimes people wait to start training their puppy, but if you're getting a puppy at anywhere from 8 weeks to 14, 16 weeks, whether you're purchasing or adopting a puppy, those puppies are impressionable at that time. They're actually in their socialization period at that time. So socializing and also training is really important, and puppies can honestly pick up training skills right away. You might not be able to throw them in the middle of a busy situation and start asking them to come when called right away, but you can start introducing concepts so that way you can start introducing them into more distracting situations as they start growing into and developing into their puppyhood and even adolescent stage. So I think that lack of training is definitely something that people don't do enough of. They need to start training their puppy early when they get it. And then not understanding maybe the puppy themselves or understanding body language and communication signals, I think, is another thing. So I always encourage puppy owners and dog owners to always start learning canine body language and communication signals, because there are so many little things that dogs are saying and explaining to us and communicating that we don't pick up when they're maybe a little bit uncomfortable, a little unsure about something, maybe a little concerned. So there are a lot of little things that you can learn from just understanding canine body language and communication skills.
Anthony, sorry to interrupt you, but can you give us a practical example of what might be some of the signs that a puppy or a dog is really uncomfortable that people tend to miss?
So I would say one of the things is when people maybe stick their face into the puppy's face. If the puppy starts yawning or sticking their tongue out or flicking their tongue out like a lizard, that can actually be a stress sign. It doesn't, yawning doesn't mean that the puppy is just tired. It depends on the context. So body language and communication signals are always based on the context that the dog is in. But just for the example of everyone wants to stick their face into a cute puppy's face and get kisses and everything, but that doesn't mean that the puppy likes that. So things like flicking the tongue out or yawning, or maybe even just the puppy turning their head away, things like that can actually be a way that a dog's communicating that I'm actually not comfortable here. And then as far as just some other things for your question, kind of other mistakes that owners might make comparing maybe their current puppy to their previous dog when they were a puppy, or maybe just now as the other dog in the home might be an adult dog, maybe 5 or 10 years old, and they're comparing that puppy to that adult dog. So I think that's one thing that we always have to remember, that every puppy and every dog as an individual. So just because you maybe have owned 10 German Shepherds, it doesn't mean that everyone was the same. They're all an individual. So I think that's something that's super important. And then also not understanding the breed of dog that you may have, whether that's a mixed breed or whether that is a purebred dog. Not understanding the specific breed that you have is something that a lot of people make mistakes with, because owning maybe a herding dog or a guardian type of breed is going to be different than owning a Labrador Retriever. And to that, even Labrador Retrievers, there's going to be a difference between one who's bred for a pet home and one that's maybe bred as a field line, working line Labrador Retriever, because even though they may look the same, it may have some structural differences, but in general to maybe a regular dog owner, they may look the same, but those two dogs may actually be very different in terms of, so yeah, I think those are some of like the main little mistakes that people make with puppies.
Yeah. I want to emphasize that last point, because I see, and you must see this all the time, that people take a dog home or a puppy because it looks cute without really understanding the breed group and the characteristics. And also back to your point earlier, like when you're saying whether you're adopting a dog or getting a dog from a breeder, this podcast is called Rescue Tales, but I don't like to take a hardline view about anything in life. And I think if you want to get a dog from a breeder, just make sure you do your research, because that would have an impact as well. If a dog is not bred well, that can have an impact on the, or if it's taken away from its, a puppy's taken away from its mother too soon or too late, can also have an impact on its behavior, right? So understanding, just spending time doing that research, I think is so important. I think we all, puppies just look so adorable, and it's so easy just to take the cutest one home, and then a few months later, you're like, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah.
I will link to Kim Brophy's book, Meet Your Dog, because I think that's a great resource for understanding more about different breed groups.
I think it's great for especially first-time dog owners or people who are actually looking to get a specific breed and want to learn more about it. And then also, I just want to say like rescues too. Like I think that if even with rescue dogs, like if you can do a DNA test and figure out what breeds might be mixed in your dog, I mean, that just knowing like the maybe breeds that show up the most, the higher percentage, it may actually explain some of the dog's behaviors and characteristics a little bit. And so understanding that might be very important for some people, whether they're trying to train their dog and it's a little challenging, or if they actually have certain behavior issues they're trying to modify.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking about getting a DNA test for my dog Rosa. I know she's got quite a lot of Podenco, so hunting breed in her. And when I read Kim Brophy's book and the chapter on sight hounds, and I'm like, oh my God, this makes so much sense now. Like so many of her behaviors just, you know, it's like the pennies were dropping. I'm like, I get it now. So I think knowledge truly is power when it comes to these things. But back to puppies. One of the challenges with puppies, and I know my mother and sister had this challenge and many, many others when their dog was a puppy, was the biting. My mom would actually call me sometimes in tears because they've got these sharp little teeth, and it is certainly an issue for lots of people. So maybe help us understand first, why do puppies bite so much? And then secondly, what can we do to stop them biting us as people?
So I guess first off, and I actually have a blog post on this topic on my website. So you can, if you want to link that in, but there's a little blog post on puppy mouthing and biting. One of the things that I actually always kind of like to distinguish is the difference between mouthing and biting. Puppy mouthing, it's maybe a little more playful. It may sometimes get a little bit hard into a bite when they're getting over aroused or they're overstimulated and excited. Whereas with, and it's usually a little grabby and playful. Whereas biting, it might become more of a concern. The dog might be actually biting down a little bit more, or they might be acting a little bit less bouncy and playful, and it might come across as a little more serious or intense. So I just like to kind of break those down and separate those a little bit, but just for the podcast, we may just be calling it biting.
I like that you're making that distinction between mouthing and biting. So you're saying mouthing is more playful, and then biting is that more related to teething, and that's so why sometimes.
Mouthing is part of puppy teething. It may be because the puppy's mouth may be hurting a little bit, or it's a little uncomfortable because their teeth may be falling out and the adult teeth might be coming in. You might see that they're constantly grabbing things or chewing on furniture, stuff like that. Whereas with biting, I look at it more as if the puppy's being a little bit confrontational, a little bit pushy, or some form of a forceful manner in their behavior, I kind of look at that as, okay, that's not just a puppy being a bouncy, playful puppy. It seems like the puppy's actually becoming a little more serious or intense with the way in which they're using their mouth or biting with the amount of pressure or even puncturing skin. And look, puppies have sharp baby teeth. So you're going to have some broken skin here and there. And like I said before, if they're getting a little aroused or overstimulated, yes, they may grab you harder. They may puncture your skin a little bit, but the intention wasn't meant to necessarily cause harm. Mm. Whereas with biting itself, sometimes there are some puppies who may show a little bit more of a concern. They may be more forceful or confrontational in their approach, and they may be trying to cause some little bit of harm of some kind. So that's why I just like to kind of explain the differences a little bit.
Okay.
So usually, like with clients, I generally will call it mouthing, just because most puppies are going to mouth and grab. Whereas biting was something that I look at a little bit more as a serious problem or concern.
What are some of the reasons why a puppy might mouth?
So a puppy might mouth because they might be teething. Puppies just may be teething to get some comfort because their mouth might be hurting with their puppy teeth in. And when their puppy teeth start to fall out and their adult teeth are coming in, that might be a little bit painful. So it's a way of kind of soothing themselves. They also mouth because they're learning and exploring about the world that they're living in. So just like kids learn from grabbing with their fingers or putting things in their mouth also, puppies learn about their world using their mouth a lot of the time. They do use a lot of their senses, like smelling or even their sight and things like that. But they do learn a lot of times by exploring with their mouth specifically and trying to figure out the world that they live in. Other puppies might actually become very mouthy when they're tired. So just like with kids, when they kind of have a little tantrum or they're getting tired and they want to stay up longer and they're getting cranky. No, you're actually a little tired, overstimulated. So some puppies are actually the same way. You may see some puppies get more mouthy or grabby and obnoxious maybe when they're actually tired and they need a nap. And so sometimes just kind of, okay, but I need to just put you in your crate or your playpen now, and you need to go to sleep. You need to go take a nap. And then also being either stressed, excited, or overstimulated, that can cause a puppy to be very mouthy. The breed of dog that they are can also depend. So maybe retrieving breeds might be a little bit more mouthy than maybe some other dogs, because retrievers were bred for the purpose of utilizing their mouth specifically. So sometimes I find that retrieving breeds might actually be a little bit more mouthy at times. And also like terrier type breeds sometimes are also more mouthy for similar purpose in some way, more that gamey type of behavior that they were bred for, because they're going to be a little more grabby and maybe. And then even things like a puppy maybe being overly touched or handled by a family member, an owner, a child, sometimes they might get mouthy because it's maybe a stress sign, or they're getting overstimulated by touch. And that might cause the puppy to actually get mouthy in that situation. So those are just some of what I find are the main reasons that puppies might actually be a little bit mouthy. The other reason could also be even like a displacement behavior. So kind of going off of like the concept of maybe a dog being a little stressed. If a dog's maybe feeling a little conflicted or concerned, they might feel a little displaced. That might be another reason that a puppy actually might use their mouth in that situation or get a little mouthy.
What are some of the things that people can do to kind of help their puppies get rid of that frustration and maybe alleviate some of the pain associated with teething?
Sure. So, you know, doing things like providing proper or appropriate chew toys is something that is always super helpful. Bones or stuffed toys with some food in it, or even freezing the food inside the toy and then giving it to the puppy when it's frozen, so maybe it lasts for a longer duration of time. So providing some forms of outlets that the puppy can use their mouth, exercise their joy, use their mouth to explore and grab and do whatever they want. So it's kind of soothing and comfortable. So I think that's something that's really important. And I think that providing maybe like little toys is also something to do. So using toys, stuffed animals, rubber toys, providing a bunch of toys of different textures, sizes, shapes is also something that can be really beneficial. And then also knowing when to puppy proof appropriately might be also really important. So if the puppy is just constantly grabbing the couch or a piece of furniture or something, maybe blocking that space so the puppy doesn't have access to it, so they're not learning to use their mouth to be destructive around your home, I think is also really important. Using a playpen so that way maybe the puppy can be sort of loose and have their toys or their bones or whatever and have some freedom without actually running around the house destroying things or grabbing things inappropriately, so they're not learning to practice that behavior is also really important.
That's great advice. What are some of the mistakes that you see people making in response to puppies when they're mouthing?
So I guess it depends on what they're mouthing on. So let's just say like we catch the puppy chewing on a piece of furniture. A lot of people might run over there and start yelling at the puppy or grab the puppy and maybe even flip them over and try and like assert themselves towards the puppy. And that can actually cause a little bit more of a problem than help down the road, because you might be making your puppy afraid of you, or you might even make your puppy start learning to have to become defensive of themselves in certain situations. So I think sometimes people respond inappropriately because they might feel like a little bit insulted that, oh, you're destroying my piece of furniture. And some people, like in terms of maybe the puppy biting the person or mouthing the person, grabbing their hands, their clothes, whatever, sometimes I think we respond by just maybe screaming or doing a high-pitched voice. And some trainers recommend like kind of squealing or making a high-pitched sound. And for some puppies, maybe that works. But for others, like my puppy, that would just amp her up and make her get more maybe aroused and become more mouthy in that situation. So sometimes maybe having to just remove myself or the puppy from the scenario would be the more appropriate thing to do. And again, like if you're providing your puppy with enough outlets, whether that's chewing on an item of that's appropriate for them or going on a walk where they can just go explore and expel some of that energy and just be able to like go sniff and explore the world, grab a leaf, grab a twig, all those things are okay. Things like that can actually reduce some of these problems because they're getting mentally stimulated and enriched.
I think that's such an important point. And I think as dog owners, we don't reflect on that enough, the extent to which sometimes undesired behaviors occur just because our dogs are frustrated and they're frustrated because they're bored and they're not stimulated enough mentally and physically. Let's talk about potty training because this is an issue for lots of people. How do you go about potty training a puppy? And maybe it'd be good to also touch on why people shouldn't be doing things like rubbing their puppy's nose in its pee or poo.
Generally with potty training, my kind of like little rules that I like to follow is that if you're getting a puppy from whether it's a rescue or purebred and they're around maybe 8 to 16 weeks old, let's just say, usually you want to be taking that puppy out anywhere from every half hour to an hour because they're going to urinate frequently. They're not going to just hold it in. And puppies are constantly on the move and exploring, moving around. They get distracted. Oh, I was chewing on a bone. Oh, what's that thing over there? It's someone's shoe or whatever. And so they're constantly on the move. So sometimes just like with children, when they're on the move, they're going to have to go to the bathroom. So just making sure you bring your puppy out every half hour to an hour is important because you want to catch them before they have the accident. Mm. So if we can bring them out every 30 minutes to an hour, we have a better shot at getting them to learn to go to the bathroom in the correct place, as opposed to, oh, an hour and a half has passed and the puppy just went to the bathroom in the middle of the living room. And scolding your puppy or getting mad at the puppy and sticking their face in whatever they've done, it just ends up leading to making the puppy more nervous of you. And I want my puppy comfortable going to the bathroom in front of me, as silly as that sounds. But I really want my puppy comfortable going to the bathroom in the front of me, as opposed to being afraid to go to the bathroom in front of me because I've yelled and scolded at the puppy so many times. Mm-hmm. Because generally when people do that, a lot of the times when I go to a home, it turns out that the puppy is going to the bathroom maybe behind the couch or under the table because it's actually avoiding the person because it thinks it cannot go to the bathroom maybe in front of them, or they just feel a little nervous or threatened of that individual and they're confused about where to go to the bathroom correct in the correct spot. So I always tell people that bring your puppy out every 30 minutes to an hour, just so that way you can start keeping track and paying attention to your puppy. If you're potty training your puppy outdoors, go out the same door all the time. So that way the puppy starts learning to go to that door because they might start learning to ask to go to the bathroom when they start knowing that's the spot I always go out. When the puppy's sniffing to go to the bathroom or kind of wandering around the yard, I usually like to use a word like get busy, go potty, magic time, whatever you want to use, just so that way the puppy starts to learn that word means to go to the bathroom. And so what I usually do is I'll say maybe while the puppy's kind of exploring, I'll just start saying the word casually. And then when the puppy's actually going to the bathroom, then I make sure I say that word as the puppy's going to the bathroom. And then once the puppy's finished, I like to praise them, make it a party and give them a treat or a couple of treats on the spot to make it a good thing so they learn that they did a good job and that's where they should be going. So that's usually what I like to do. I also like bringing the dog outside on a leash. So if you have a fenced yard, I still encourage owners to make sure that they leash their puppy up just so that way the puppy doesn't go to the bathroom and then runs away from you and you don't have the opportunity now to reward your puppy, praise your puppy. So at least if I can catch the puppy on the spot attached to the leash, I have a better chance of of reinforcing that behavior and teaching them that this is what I want you to do when we're out here, and this is the correct place to start going to the bathroom. And then just some other little signs. I always tell people, if your puppy's running around a lot, then you need to bring your puppy out sooner. If your puppy has had a drink of water, within the next 5-10 minutes of drinking the water, you should just bring your puppy out, even if you just came inside from a potty break, because chances are is the puppy is going to go to the bathroom again. And then little tricks is, if your puppy doesn't go to the bathroom, maybe go outside, run them around a little bit, get their body moving, because they may end up going to the bathroom after running around a little bit. They actually may end up going to the bathroom. So those are just some of the little tips that I generally like to share with dog owners or puppy owners.
I think that's fantastic. And I had no idea that puppies are such hard work.
They are. But I think if you get some consistency with potty training and you're consistent with it, I think that it really usually ends up going well for most owners. You just have to be very consistent in your potty training.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I suppose with all training, consistency is key, but I can imagine some listeners hearing you say, take your puppy out every half an hour to an hour, and just be like, whoa, I don't have time to be doing that. What would you say to those people?
I mean, look, if first of all, if you're getting a puppy and you work full time, yeah, it's going to be challenging. And that's maybe where you need to have someone come in and let the puppy out a little bit. Because if you're just letting your puppy stay in the crate all day or in their playpen all day, and they don't understand where to go to the bathroom, they're just going to start making that little decision for themselves. And that might set you way further back later on when your dog is in the adolescent stage of puppyhood or even as an adult. So starting early is always the best thing to do. If you could take a couple days off from work when you get your puppy, that might be something to consider. That way you can just start setting the foundation, and then you get a little routine going, and then you might know how to set your puppy up appropriately and have all your ducks in a row. So that way you're set up to help your puppy have some success during potty training.
Okay. And generally, how long does it take to potty train a dog if you are consistent and kind of following the advice that you just gave us?
It's so hard to answer, because everyone always asks that. And yeah. I think it really is dependent on the actual puppy itself. So my adult dog, he came to my home a little later. He came to my home at 14 weeks old, and it took him maybe a week to understand where to go and all that. And he only had one accident, and the whole, like, in during his puppyhood with me. And honestly, that was my fault, because I wasn't paying attention. And he went to the bathroom somewhere in one of the extra bedrooms in my house. And never again did he have that accident, because I made sure to be on top of him. But then we have my current puppy, and she has taken so much longer to potty train, where she started to understand where to go, where the appropriate place was, and all of that. So it really just depends on the puppy. And also, now that you're asking that, it just made me think of, like, one of the other rules of thumb that I have for people with potty training is, if you bring your puppy out and they don't go to the bathroom, I don't just bring them back in the house and let them have free time. I usually, if I bring the puppy outside or place them on their wee-wee pad, if they're going on a pad and they don't go to the bathroom, I'll then place the puppy back in their confinement space, whether that's the playpen or their crate. And I'll put them in there anywhere from 5 to 10 or even 15 minutes. And then I'll take them back out and place them back in the spot where I want them to go to the bathroom before I let them have free time. Because if you come back in the house and give your puppy free time when it didn't go to the bathroom, there's a pretty good chance your puppy's going to run to the other end of the room and go to the bathroom and have an accident. So you want to try avoiding those things. So just kind of coming back in, place your puppy in its containment space, then bring it back outside. Oh, you did a good job. You went to the bathroom. Now you earned free time. So I think that's important, because that can help avoid accidents inside the home.
Yeah. And I think also what you said around, like, the time, like how long it takes to train a puppy to go to the bathroom in the right place. I think that's really important, because I know you, there is no, you can't just say it's 5.5 days, right? But it, I think it's helpful for listeners to know that some, with all sorts of training, right? And any kind of behavior modification, whatever that might be, some dogs pick up things really quickly and others, it can take a while. So I guess just encouraging listeners to be consistent and hopeful, just stick to the plan and just be patient and know patience, I suppose, rather than hope, right? But just stick to the plan and be consistent and you will start to see results eventually, but just don't lose motivation if you're not seeing things work the way you'd expect them to super early on.
Yeah. And you can even keep a little log or a journal whenever your puppy goes to the bathroom, whether they went in the correct place you want to train them in, or they had an accident. I would be writing all that down and write the time that they went to the bathroom. So you could, you know, just helps keep track if you forget, or even setting the timer on your cell phone to go off every 30, 45 minutes, an hour, whatever it is. That way you remember to bring the puppy to the bathroom. Yeah. I think sometimes that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. Super. This has been great talking about puppies. Let's shift gears and talk about another really important topic, which is recall. I watched one of your videos where you work. I'm not sure if this was your dog or one of your clients' dogs, where you were just demonstrating amazing recall in very high distraction environments. So what I'm going to do is link to that video, but just to describe it to anyone listening rather than watching, is basically the dog in the video was heading towards some ducks around what looked like a big pond or a lake and started running. And you called the dog turns around and looked at you for a second and then just came running to you. And I watched that. I'm like, oh, I need Rosa, my dog. Because the last time she saw ducks, she jumped in the water and she swam after them for like a good probably 200 meters. And I jumped in after her. So it was Rosa swimming after the ducks and me swimming after Rosa. And I was like, this is awful.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, that video was of my adult dog journey. That particular video, we were hiking in this maybe 50 acre field that is behind our agility center that we go train at. And we were there early. So we were just hiking the field and hiking the trails in the woods behind the field. And I just happened to have my camera running. And so I clipped it because I had more running and he just was starting to run towards these ducks in the pond. So I was like, okay, this will be interesting. So he started running and I said, I'll just let him do it. Let's see if he actually responds because his recall is really good. So I said, okay, let's just see if he can recall off of this. So he gets towards them and then that's where at a certain point I just called him and that's where you see him put on the brakes and a big like wave of water splashes in the air. That was him putting the brakes on and that's when then he whipped around and came back to me. I started recall with him early. When I work with puppies, I do always encourage clients to always train your puppy to start responding to their name and to recall right away, like day one. You want it like whenever anyone asks, like, what's the secret to good off-leash recall with my puppy? Like, you should have trained it yesterday. You know, everyone asks at 6 months of age, I want my puppy off-leash. Well, no, I want my puppy off-leash day one when I'm getting it. Like, even my puppy I have now, she's 18 weeks, I think. The day I went to pick her up, we were already walking off-leash together and I made it a point because that's what I want for my life. I want to be able to bring my dogs off leash places that I'm allowed to do that. And I think that's an important skill that should be introduced day one right away, along with teaching the puppy their name.
Let's just talk more generally about recall, even with adult dogs. If someone has an older dog, not a puppy, and they hadn't had the opportunity to just didn't work on the recall early on, what are some of the key things that we should be doing? And then what are some of the mistakes? And answer in any order, if you want to start with the mistakes first, if that's easier, like the mistakes people make when training recall and how we really should be training recall.
Well, I think I could answer the question. I think I'd answer all of them in one answer, which is relationship building, I think is the most important thing. So I think people make the mistake that they don't have the relationship with a dog that maybe is needed for them to look to you for advice and information, and to look to maybe answer that question when you ask them to come to you. So I think that relationship building is really important. It's one of the mistakes I think a lot of people make, that they don't have a strong enough relationship or they don't put enough time into that. And then I think that in terms of how can we start getting our dogs, our adult dogs to recall, again, having a relationship with them is a start. So that might be, and that can be through like training little games with recall. Susan Garrett has a program called Recallers, and she has a program called Homeschool the Dog. And then there's also programs like Absolute Dogs, who's they're based in the UK, I believe. And a lot of like the games that these programs focus on are they're actual games to not only build a relationship, but start teaching skills. So I teach a lot of my recall games like that, where maybe I'll throw a treat in the corner of a room and the dog goes to get it. And then once they get that treat, I'll run away calling them. So that way they come chase me, and then I reinforce them for coming when I've asked them to call, ask them to come to me. So making it a fun little game is really important. You can do it with, you can use reinforcement at like food rewards, or you can use toys to make it a fun experience. Like that video that you were talking about with Journey chasing the ducks. That video, I threw a toy towards him as his reward when he came to me. So using toy and play, toys and play and tugging can actually build a relationship quite nicely, because the dog becomes, some dogs anyway, find that very reinforcing. It becomes a nice little game. So I think creating games in your training is really important. I think a lot of people, another mistake a lot of people make is they you recall generally in bad situations, number one, right away, or they throw their dog in a distracting environment or a situation that they shouldn't be in because they weren't trained to work in that situation yet. And so I think that's something a lot of people make mistakes with, is they're making their recall just this negative demanding thing. Like if I did that with my dog Journey, he would, in that video, he would not have responded to me. We've hiked in the woods where deer have come across, and I'm able to call him off before he gets to them or before he even thinks of chasing them. And that's just because we've worked through little situations before we just went to that situation. So it was a little buildup. I look at, and I guess like, as I'm saying this, it just kind of crossed my mind. Like I always say to clients all the time, like training your dog, regardless of what you're training, but for this case, recall, training your dog is like going to the gym and trying to lose weight. You don't just go to the gym and on day one think that you lost 5 pounds. Like that's not realistic. So that's the first thing. Okay. The second thing is once you start working out and you build up to your goals, you don't just stop. You continue to maintain the weight off, right? So it's the same concept applies to training your dog, whether it's a sport that you want to do with your dog, or whether you just want to teach your dog to come when called, or whether you're trying to modify a behavior problem. It's all about building up to those steps. It's not just, okay, I'm throwing you in the deep end now, and I want you to do this because I said so. And that doesn't help your dog in any way. It sets them backwards or sets them up for failure. And that's not what you want, to always set your dog up for success.
I absolutely love your response to that question. And especially what you said about build a great relationship with your dog. I've recently been through that experience. So I'm always trying to build a good relationship with my dog. But when I realized and what you said in terms of like playing tug and just having fun with them, is since I've been paying more attention to really engaging with her and playing with her and having fun with her, her recall has improved so much. Mm-hmm. And I will just, sometimes we go hiking in the woods and I have to put her on a long leash. I can't leave her off leash. She's not there yet. But what I'll do is as soon as I start to see she might be getting a bit distracted, I will call her with a lot of excitement. She'll come running to me and I'll give her I'll give her a treat. And sometimes she'll pause for a second and you can see she's kind of like deciding what to do. Mm-hmm. But now she's much more likely to decide to come to me, which for me is huge progress, because I was like, would this ever be possible? And I observe her behavior when there's wildlife around. I just think, right, this is not safe for her or for the animals for me to leave her off leash. Now I'm hopeful that maybe one day we'll get there, but definitely building the relationship. And also what you said about not thinking of it in terms of, oh, my dog must obey me and I'm giving you this command and you must come to me. Because I do see that so often. And I think sometimes because I even experience it, sometimes we feel embarrassed if we call our dog and they kind of look at us and then just completely ignore us. And I think we need to sometimes get over that and make sure that our reaction isn't as a result of how we feel emotionally, maybe humiliated or embarrassed in front of people, right? That's really important too. I think often, we talked about this before we started recording, is often our emotions tend to get in the way of the right training and building the right relationship with our dogs.
When our dogs don't listen, it's like they're blowing us off. Or like I always joke around, it's like, yep, my puppy just gave me the finger. She just decided she didn't want to listen now. And so we kind of get insulted when our dogs don't respond to us. But again, like going back to what I said earlier, like we have to take a step back and kind of understand, well, why didn't that work that time? Mm. Like the other day, my puppy was off leash with me in a field and she found this stick. And I was trying to like go in another direction and she just found the stick so much fun for that particular day. Like usually she just comes and like she plays with the stick and then she'll come with the stick or whatever. But that day she just thought it was the best stick in the world, I guess. And she just had to zoom around in circles in her own mind and just like did not care that I was present. So I could go over and start yelling at her and everything, but that's not going to do any good for me in that situation because she's on another planet in that moment. So
it's not personal. I think that's the thing that we have. It is not personal when your dog ignores you, or it's really not personal. Anthony, there's two more topics that I'm really keen to chat with you about in the time we have left, which are leash reactivity and resource guarding. And obviously with both of those challenges, dogs will often be displaying aggressive behaviors. And this is an area of expertise for you. So really, really keen to have a chat. Maybe let's start with leash reactivity and help our listeners understand what's going on from the dog's perspective when you're walking a dog on leash and it sees another dog and it just starts barking, lunging, snapping, growling, all of this, or even trying to bite. What's happening from the dog's perspective?
So the leash reactivity is sometimes such a complex issue because there are so many reasons that the dog might display this behavior. And so leash reactivity could be a dog barking at whatever they're reacting to, lunging towards whatever they're reacting to, barking and backing away. So some of those behaviors could be a reaction because they're afraid or uncomfortable. Other reasons might be because the dog is just frustrated. Maybe they want to go say hello, but because they're attached to the leash, they can't. Mm-hmm. And as a result, it might build up some frustration. And then some dogs might also react this way if they're feeling threatened, or if they feel that they need to protect or defend themselves, or even their owner, or even if there's another dog with you. So like if, for example, just the other day I was walking my dogs and my adult dog, who is the friendliest, nicest dog on the planet, saw a person walking and he decided he needed to start growling and barking at this person, which he has never done before. But because my puppy was there and he's starting to actually get a little bit protective of her, he started reacting at this person who's just walking by us on a walk. And so sometimes something like that can even trigger a dog to become reactive in that particular situation.
Anthony, I'm really curious, what did you do?
So I was surprised, actually. So I actually stood there trying to watch to see what he was going to continue to do because I was just so curious about it because I had never seen him respond that way before. Like his tail was like raised as far as it could be. It was like the hair on his back was up and he was just standing there like barking. And I was just so surprised that I actually started laughing a little because I was like, oh, I can't even believe you're doing this right now. So if anyone wants to know what the trainer does when their dog reacts, it's sitting there laughing in such shock. So I really was just so surprised. It was just kind of funny to me because in so many situations, he's a wimp. So like, he's just such a wimp in so many ways. And when I saw that, I was like, okay, that's new. So in that situation with him, I just kind of laughed and walked it off after I observed it for a little bit. And we just kind of kept on walking. But normally, if I know that the dog's going to react to something, I would start trying to maybe pair that with something positive, like praising them and maybe giving them a piece of food when they notice that trigger in the environment. So a trigger would be something that triggers the dog to react. So you see a person passing by across the street, I'll just make sure I'm on the other side of the street so I have some distance between us, and I might start pairing that with a piece of food just so the dog starts learning every time a person appears, it means something good. So that might be one of the techniques that I might decide to use. I might do some other things too, depending on the situation. I might start labeling that a little bit so the dog learns, like every time I say, oh, it's a friend, like they know it's something good. So there are a lot of little strategies and techniques to start working through things like that. Generally speaking, having some distance is always important. So I always say distance is your best friend, because if you can be far enough away from that trigger, it won't get your dog over threshold and they can be in more of a thinking state of mind instead of a reactive state of mind.
Okay. Just want to mention that what you didn't do or you didn't advise people to do in what you just said was to tell their dog off or shout at them or yank them. So maybe on that note, what are some of the mistakes you see people making that can actually make the problem worse when it comes to leash reactivity?
So sometimes some people, one of the things that surprises me that a lot of people do, which I always find so interesting, is their dog might be reacting and they, oh no, my dog actually just wants to say hi, and they let the dog go over to the person or the other dog. And sometimes that may be true. Like my puppy gets frustrated on the leash, and if I did let her go say hi, she would most of the time. But the thing is that appropriate, number one, for your dog to start learning that when I react this way, it makes me go over there to say hello? Is it appropriate for the other dog that your dog is approaching? Because we might know why our dog is doing something. That doesn't mean that the other person or the other dog understands that. That might come across as very threatening to that other individual. And so some dogs might respond accordingly to protect themselves. So I think that's one mistake a lot of people make. Another thing is some people use punishment. And look, I'm not arguing I'm not arguing that punishment doesn't work, because it can, but is it appropriate for your dog or for that specific situation? And inconsistent punishment is another part of that problem. So sometimes you might punish your dog with whatever that might be, whether you're giving a leash correction, or you're grabbing your dog by the collar, yelling at them in their face, or even maybe in some cases, some people might hit their dog or do something like that. And it might make the problem worse because they might start associating those things with the trigger, which might make them react more. Or it might send a very confusing message to your dog. And I don't advocate for that type of handling of issues like this, because it might make problems worse, and it might cause an issue with relationship with the owner and their dog. So it can actually make behavior issues worse depending on the situation in which the dog is reacting or why they're reacting.
I think often people get really wound up when their dogs react that way. I know.
Yeah, they get emotional and embarrassed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And just sometimes panicked. I know that, because I was mentioning to you that sometimes my dog will just bark at people, and sometimes kids. So I make sure she's always on leash around kids, but I do go into a bit of a panic, and I'm like, oh God. And I just have to be very conscious about how I respond and make sure that I'm not doing or saying anything that might make it even worse moving forward. But I think staying safe and not letting your dog approach the other dog or the person or the child or whatever it seems to be reacting towards is really, really sound advice for anyone dealing with these issues. But maybe Anthony, let's in the last few minutes just touch on resource guarding briefly, because sometimes with resource guarding, dogs can exhibit similar behaviors, growling, lunging, barking, attempting to bite, or even biting. So again, maybe let's just touch on why do dogs resource guard? And maybe let's talk about resource guarding from whether it's a toy or a bone or whatever kind of food or a person.
So resource guarding, for those who maybe don't know, resource guarding, what I usually say is it's possessive behavior towards something the dog feels the need to protect or control access to in that specific moment in time. So like some people might say, well, why is my dog very protective of the bully stick, but the dog's not protective towards the food dish when he's eating dinner? And it might just be the value of the item. So the dog might find the bone, the bully stick, way more valuable and interesting compared to their food dish with their dinner in it. They may not find that as valuable. So they may be more likely to protect the thing that they find valuable at that particular moment in time. And so as far as why dogs do it, it just like anything kind of depends. It depends on the situation, but and the dog itself. So sometimes dogs might guard because they feel threatened and the need to protect whatever, whomever in that particular moment. It might be a stress or fear related type of response. And then you have other dogs who might do it as a way of maybe controlling access or controlling the situation. And that might be breed dependent too. So that's something also to keep in mind, because I don't think that all dogs display aggressive behavior out of fear. Like I know a lot of people tend to say that, a lot of professionals tend to say that a dog who displays aggression, most of the time aggression is fear-based. I mean, I don't know how much of that is true. I think that really depends on a lot of factors. So I think that dogs who are bred more for guarding or protective types of behavior have a higher likelihood of being protective, because maybe they're more confident in their behavior or their response, not because they're afraid. So I think that's something that's really important. It depends on maybe the breed of dog as well. So I think that's something that needs to be taken into account.
I think that's a really interesting comment about aggression being driven by fear. I think with resource guarding, because I reflect on my dog's behavior, and sometimes she has her favorite frisbee. And if a dog comes near her when she's playing with that frisbee, she gets very agitated and she will tell them by growling, sometimes by snarling, that, hey, back off, this is mine. She's not scared. She's just telling them to back the hell off. And I think your point around, again, this keeps coming up, like you need to understand the breed that you have and its characteristics to really unpick some of these behaviors.
The situation for sure. I think both those are super important.
Yeah, context is key. What are some of the big no-nos that you see people doing, the big mistakes you see people making when it comes to trying to address resource
guarding? Not respecting the dog's wishes. So I think, like, again, going back to everything we've said today, which is I think that we as people become very insulted when our dog does something that we don't like. So in this situation, when our dog growls at us or bares their teeth a little bit, we might feel insulted. And that's not what you do to me as your owner. I think that we have to understand, well, the dog growling or baring their teeth at you is a warning sign. That's how they're communicating their displeasure, or they're telling the person or other dog to back off, or whatever the case may be, if they're feeling threatened. And so displaying those behaviors as warning signs is much better than getting bitten. And so I think understanding that is really, really important. Other things, going in and just taking items away from our dogs. It's kind of like if I'm at a restaurant and someone randomly walked up to my dish and stuck their fork in my plate. I admit that I am a little bit of a resource guarder when it comes to food, and I would not be happy. And you can ask many of my family members that. And I'm not very happy when people touch my food. So I think that using that example is something that we can identify with. So just going in and grabbing something out of the dog's possession is rude. And so it might be your sock that the dog has, but that doesn't mean that it's appropriate to go take back your sock in that situation, because the dog may feel that now, oh, this is mine because it's in my possession. Mm. Chasing the dog around the house is a big problem, especially with younger dogs, puppies, teenage dogs between like the ages of 6 months and maybe a year, 2 years, like those young dogs. Over time, like if you start chasing that puppy or that adolescent dog, they're going to start learning that when they're getting chased, it's a threatening thing if they want that item. Mm. And that they're going to maybe start learning to step it up and protect that item. Mm. As a result, because they've learned, I have an item, they're making a big deal of it every time I have this item, or they're chasing me around and I don't like that. That they start learning to develop or display certain behaviors to start setting rules and boundaries to say, like, I don't like this, so I'm going to snap at you now, or I'm going to growl at you now. And so a lot of people might get offended again at something like that. But the reality is maybe you could have handled the situation a little bit different. And things like that teach the dog to start displaying that type of behavior. So that's really important to know, like, not to start chasing your dog around. Maybe in the beginning, just start trading the item out until you get a professional in, if it's becoming a problem, or you're trying to just kind of address this so it doesn't become a problem. But starting to chase the dog around the house or things like that are just going to teach the dog to start running away from you and maybe even start possessing that item more and displaying more aggressive types of behavior.
Okay. That's great advice. And I do remember seeing a video on your YouTube channel where you're working with, I'm not sure if it was your puppy in that video, where you kind of walk past the puppy, he's got a bone and you're giving the puppy treats and then just walking past. So I will link to that because I think that might be a useful resource for people as well. But
I have a blog too. I have a blog on my site. And the blog, I think, has two or three videos, including the one I think that you're talking about. And so the blog kind of explains resource guarding, explains some of the body language to identify with a dog who might be resource guarding, things not to do with resource guarding. And then there's a couple of little videos for puppy, like just prevention in resource guarding for puppies and young dogs.
Amazing. Anthony, it's been a pleasure chatting with you today. Where can listeners find out more about you and yourself?
Yeah, so they can visit my website. So because my last name is a little difficult to spell, I have a couple other websites. So you can go to behaviordogs.com and myaggressivedog.com. And that'll bring you to my business page, which is DeMarinis Dog Training and Behavior.
Super. And you do online sessions for clients as well. You don't just do them in person. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah. I have a lot of clients in different states here in the US. I have a couple of clients actually in other countries. So I do it quite often, actually. Was doing it before the pandemic started. So something I was doing for at least a year prior to that. So something I've experienced.
Super amazing. Well, thank you so much, Anthony. It's been great chatting with you today.
Likewise. Thank you.